right down Santa Claus Lane. Vixen and Blitzen and all his reindeer are pulling on the rain. Bells are ringing and children are singing and all is merry and bright. Hang your stocking and say your prayers, for Santa Claus is coming tonight.
Oh, here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane. He's got.
I had to wait until my favorite part when they go da 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 da. It's linoleum knife time.
It sure is. Welcome. What?
I don't know. I'm just not into anything today.
It's a sleepy Sunday. It's cold and rainy, which is
unusual on both counts
for Los Angeles
in this city.
Yeah.
In these times.
In this town.
And had a big Christmas party yesterday and really tired.
Yes. And we were both sick last week and we're still yes. This is why you tuned in. We'll shut up now. You are Dave White, film critic for movies.com.
You're Alonzo Duralde, you are the film critic for therap.com. Also you are on What the Flick.
Yes.
This is the name of this podcast is Linoleum Knife, and it's about movies.
Yes, it is.
We talk about them.
We do.
And there's only one really to talk. Well, okay, there are two.
No, we're going to do two.
There's only one. All right. Actually, there are three.
Yes.
The Hobbit.
Right.
Then there's Save the Date,
mm-hmm.
which is a little tiny indie.
Right, which is also available on demand.
And then opening on Wednesday of this week
mm-hmm.
is the new Michael Haneke?
Haneke.
The new Michael Haneke movie.
When people say Haneke, they get corrected with Hanukkah.
A more.
Haneke. Oh, Haneke.
The
let's
name.
Light the menorah.
The name of it is a more.
Yes.
So we're going to talk about that too.
Yes. I also, you know, it is unfortunately, we did such a great job marketing autographed copies of my book, Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas, that we're out of them. And we don't know that we're going to be getting more in time for Christmas.
I'm not
so.
Hearing you very well. Are you,
really?
Are your levels good?
Yeah.
I'm here. You sound far away to me.
Just emotionally. Anyway, so we've already had a couple of people who ordered who we had to say, well, we really can't.
Look, you can still buy the book.
Guarantee that you can get
it. You
by
can
Christmas.
Still buy the book right now. Order it off Amazon.
Yes,
have
oh,
them send
absolutely.
If you need it by Christmas.
I can't help
you. You can get it from Amazon by Christmas.
Absolutely, just it won't be signed.
You just don't get it from us.
Right.
Signed by the author by Christmas.
You could
because
you could,
we are now out of them. Right. I mean, we've got like a batch more coming.
But we don't know
but where. They're just in transit right yeah. now. We don't
you,
know.
You could buy it on Kindle and have it in seconds.
True.
For that matter.
Do you get the pictures on Kindle?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah, you get the whole shebang.
Show you, Kindle shows you pictures too?
Mm-hmm. Have I never shown you my book on my phone?
No, I don't want to see it.
Fine.
I don't want to ever have a Kindle or a book in a machine.
I downloaded the Kindle app to my phone just so that I could buy a copy of my book and see what it looked like.
Like, if I were going to read something incredibly stupid, like, let's say I decided to read 50 Shades of Grey.
For instance.
The
book that sold more Kindles than...
Yeah, then I would get it on a Kindle because I wouldn't want people to look at me like, ugh, what are you doing, you know? But I've had that experience my entire life of reading things that were really stupid and just, I read them at home. I don't bring them with me anywhere.
Right.
You know? And that's the solution. I always have a book with me. I store one in the car just in case. I've got one in my bag just in case. I've got one by the bed.
No one should ever be embarrassed to be seen reading my book, however.
No, your book is a delight. All the time.
Carry it with pride.
Yeah.
We were talking about, like, the one, you know, this is the month where websites sort of ask me to do lists of, you know, five Christmas movies or five Christmas movies.
They're free.
Not always, but often, yes.
Most of the time.
It's basically a promotional opportunity for me.
We've got a promotional opportunity for you. We would like you to provide content for our website for free so that you can promote your book. Now, suckers like you take up on that. You take advantage of that. And you're like, okay, it's going to help me. And I guess in the long run it does.
Well, and it's not like I have to do any additional research, you know. I mean,
but it's
I
just, still a real assy way to conduct a website.
Well, you know, thank you, Arianna Huffington, for your fabulous new web paradigm. Yeah. Anyway, my point was, one movie that I had not gotten around to really getting to plug anywhere that we hadn't really talked about lately on the podcast that you and I are big fans of is This Christmas.
This Christmas!
Yeah. with Idris Elba and Chris Brown Regina King,
Loretta Devine,
Delroy Lindo,
bunch of folks.
Yeah, really fun movie. Really great sort of like family that gets together over Christmas movie and gets a lot of that sort of family dynamic stuff right.
Say my favorite line in the movie.
Santa already had your cookies. you know, it's
the best.
As somebody who comes from a big family myself, the it's like what, five siblings in the film or something.
There's a lot of folks in this movie.
Yeah, and they really get that dynamic right about like when everybody gets back together, how people sort of revert to the roles of, you know, oldest, youngest, that kind of thing. And it's very funny and very sweet and shot in a beautiful area of LA. And
how come it's not? Did you say it's in TiVo, but it's not on a not? It
airs
on, showing it.
TBS airs it a lot
with lots of commercials.
Yeah, yeah. I think like TBS.
I don't think that would bother me. I mean, I want to see it again. I've now decided I kind of like watching it every year.
Okay.
It's not a great movie. It's just lots of fun to watch.
It's satisfying.
And then there's the best part at the end when.
Regina King
takes the belt and just whips the crap out of her cheating husband. It's first she. This is not a spoiler. I mean, it's a spoiler, but it's not a great. It's not a terrible spoiler. It's a selling point.
Yeah, you'll want to see this even after we describe
it. He's such a jerk, and he's done her so wrong. And she takes baby
oil.
Wait,
whoa! You're getting ahead of it. So he comes back from this, quote-unquote, business trip where he's basically hooking up with the mistress, and that's where she catches him.
Right.
So first, she drives his SUV, like, over an embankment into the wall.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And then when he comes back to the house, she greets him wearing this, like, you know, lingerie. It's like, oh, baby, I missed you.
Right.
And so he thinks, you know, he's about to get, you know, some Regina King action. And then when he hops in the shower, she goes in, takes all of the towels, all the bath mats, everything out of there, and then covers the tile floor with baby oil. So then, and then she comes in and like pulls the shower curtain back and starts thwacking him with the belt, and he can't get anywhere because like he's slipping on the floor, and you know,
he steps out of the shower, he's sliding on the baby oil and falling down. She's whipping him with a belt.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. Yeah. Christmas.
Yeah. It is better than any moment Tyler Perry has ever conceived.
True.
Of you know.
Any non-Madea moment, anyway.
True. But yeah. Of spousal revenge. So, yeah, check it out. And it's, you know, it's Chris Brown before he became
that Chris Brown,
yeah. You know. So if you can sort of put that out of your mind, you know, he's actually kind of...
Yeah, it was made in that window when he was still, you know, appearing on Oprah and she was calling him sweet.
Yeah, and he seemed like a nice young boy who could really dance well.
And sing, yeah. He seemed like a nice kid back then.
Yeah.
And then, you know, turned out he had...
issues.
Anger issues and other problems. Why did we start talking about this movie?
Just because I wanted to throw it in there before we got into the new movies. I didn't see The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey. Is that what it's going? Is that the full title? An Unexpected Journey to the Colon. Because I am...
Because you don't care. Because you're a hater.
I am a hater. Here's the thing. I dropped out of Lord of the Rings after the first movie. I was not down for it. And at the time, I wasn't reviewing. I think I was working at The Advocate. So I didn't have to see 2 and 3. So I didn't. And then when this one rolled around, at first I thought, oh, all right, fine. I guess I'll go back and see them. And I thought, wait a minute. If I don't have to see it, I'm not gonna see it. So, like, I assigned it to Leah Rosen at the Wrap, so, who turns out is also a Lord of the Rings hater. But I figured at least, you know, I wanted to
better her than you.
Yeah, and yeah. If I were a fan, I wouldn't want someone like me reviewing this movie, or I wouldn't care.
I'm a fan, and I don't want someone like you talking to me about it.
Well, exactly. So I didn't go, and like I almost was gonna have to go this week and take Dave because I was gonna get him into a screening
an early screening
that I could get into that he couldn't.
You were sick, and I was still getting over sick. and coughing.
Yeah,
and
so we didn't go. So Dave
ruining everyone else's movie
exactly.
Experience.
So Dave went Friday morning
even before the 48 frames per second,
and I didn't
had a chance to ruin it for them.
Yeah. So tell us about the 48 frames per second 3D innovations of Peter Jackson and how they really enhance the movie going experience.
Well, it's a technological marvel, you see. All right. My review actually did post this weekend on movies.com, where I had to split the star rating right down the middle, two and a half, because as this is an analog I've mentioned before, but your favorite band puts out a record. Like, I love my favorite band so much, I'm going to buy that record. You know, and everyone's like, it sucks, don't get it, this is the one that sucks. Go get it anyway. Love it because it's your favorite band. So.
Even though in your heart of hearts, you know it's not their best
work. Even though in your heart of hearts, you know it's not their best work. Like, this isn't as good as any of the Lord of the Rings movies. And I really love the Lord of the Rings movies. And I love them so much that I don't care that he wants to make a 9-hour Hobbit. Fine. If it were a miniseries on TV, everybody would be like, fine, this is great. You know? I'm fine with, you know, the prologue taking 45 minutes.
Yikes.
Which it kind of really did. You know, Gandalf comes to Bilbo and he's like, let's go on this adventure. And Bilbo's like, no. And he's like, yes. And then the dwarves show up and they throw the plates around and they sing the songs. And then he goes with the dwarves, you know, and they meet Gollum and then the trolls and the goblins and, you know, it's like
orcs.
Things that chase them and, you know, Gandalf saves them. And the book, the movie takes up like the first three chapters of the book or something. Like, it's it's not. In order to have this a narrative sort of momentum, the dwarves become more important than they would have been. And then he gets, you know, he winds up, you know, meeting Gollum and, you know, the ring and the precious and the et cetera. So, there are, you know, narrative problems and there are tone problems and there are pacing problems and characterization problems. Like, Bilbo is sort of not. He's just kind of along for the ride. Like, he's no Elijah Wood. Like, you get that Elijah Wood wide-eyed, you know, terror and innocence and love just blasting from his corneas, you know. You feel for him. You want to protect him. You want to go with him. You want to help him. Martin Freeman, you know, you're sort of like, okay, yeah, you should just go home. Just go back to the little cozy little hobbit hole that you live in. You know, I will join you. We will have tea.
We'll have 8 meals a day or whatever they do.
But again, as a fan, I do not care that this film is 3 hours long. I do not care about really any of the filmmaking problems. I just want to live in that world for 3 hours. I want to live in that world for 3 hours. I want to watch them have the adventure. I want to adore them.
So you're everything that's wrong with movies.
I am everything that's wrong with movies regarding this franchise. And I said this in my review that I'm betraying my chosen profession just right now in this moment because I'm too much of a fan to separate myself and be objective. I copped to that in writing. And I, you know what? That's my failure, I suppose.
Look, we're allowed to be fans of
things. Yeah, and that's my failure. And so I am going to go see this movie again. And I'm going to go see it again in 2D and no 20 and 24 frames per second. Here's why I had the most miserable day Friday morning when I finally get to see the film. The technological achievement of 48 frames per second is so crispy and eyeball assaulting to me.
Would you want to see a documentary shot that way?
No, I don't want to look at anything shot that way.
Okay.
And I've been reading a lot about it this weekend. Like, why some people respond to it positively and some don't. And apparently it's all psychological. You know, you're not used to seeing this. And
sure.
Different perceptions of film reality. And there's a piece on, I think it's Mubi, M-U-B-I, mm-hmm. not movies.com. That's where I write, but Mubi, M-U-B-I.com. By right. Ignati Vishnevetsky, about film history and the different frame rates that have happened. And how, you know, if this were a push forward into the new century, that it should have essentially accompanied a film that was also sort of a push forward. You know, but it's not. It's this very, very conservative movie. It's a movie product right. for fans.
It's a franchise.
It's not a groundbreaking cinematic achievement. It's a cozy thing.
It's not film socialism.
And as what I said in my review, this is a thing. This technology has microwaved this film and exploded it in a way that feels harsh and cold to me. It doesn't. I think I see things all separated. I see every meticulous detail just scratching at me. Mm. When all I really want is to wrap myself in a blanket in my pajamas and watch Hobbits.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not it's not a warm experience at all. And so I need to go back and look at this again in my own time some morning after Christmas when it's all tied down.
Unfettered.
Yeah, and in 2D and regular old 24.
Right.
So that hopefully it will look okay to me again because it looks crazy to me. And maybe it's just the newness. Maybe that's the problem. But boy, did it just rub me every which way wrong.
I talked about this a little on What the Flick.
I couldn't stand what I was seeing.
The one experience I've had with this sort of thing was going to look at 3D televisions one time. I did a Movie Line like gift guide article a couple years ago about 3D TVs. I think it was like the first year they were available. And it is a little jarring how like brightly lit and very well defined, and you know, and on the one hand, I remember looking at it just thinking like this is like standing in a newsroom watching things, you know, the way that everything's so lit. And then also, it occurred to me after a while, it's like, you know what, this is going to be a thing where this becomes more the norm. Young people grow up watching television and movies like this, and they'll just think that's their like base level of thing, and
possibly.
When they see something projected on 35, it's going to look quaint or archaic or something because they don't perceive filmed entertainment through the filter that we do,
right?
Of varying, you know, it's like you know when people you know talked about how. I always remember that joke in Singing in the Rain when early on at the movie he does they show the example of what a sound movie will be like, and one of the silent screen actors says, "I think it's vulgar." I think that for a lot of us who grew up looking at movies and looking at old school television, this is vulgar. But for people there's going to be a coming generation that's their normal.
Right, but all that stuff from the past is still going to exist, and they're going to, if it's normal to them, they will perceive normality on two parallel tracks, because it'll be a while before everything is like
this. Well, of course.
And I hope everything never is like this,
because
it looks bad, and I just really would like, you know, either make the process better, make the technology better, so that it doesn't assault people who, you know what? I'm only 48 years old. I'm not 1,000.
Right.
I'm not a fuddy-duddy. You know, I just, you know, I'm part of the audience of film. I want it to look okay to me, too. You know, I don't think this has to do with that.
But think of how silent movies look to people who aren't used to seeing them and who haven't, like, taken a film class or whatever and sort of been you know, have it explained to them and know what to expect.
Yeah, I did that with an audience this summer, and they laughed at it, if you recall.
Oh, right.
I don't want to mention the what's and the where's of how that happened, but because it would be offensive to someone. But, yeah, they laughed at it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, what is the first silent movie you've ever seen in your whole life? And the answer probably was yes.
Yes. Yeah. No, that was a bizarre experience. So, yeah, I mean, so I think that's going to be the same thing. I think for people who are used to seeing the bright and crispy three-dimensional da-da-da-da, you know, looking at something like, I don't know, like a noir film, it's going to be like, eh, what's this? Why is it so dark?
Yeah. So anyway, I had a really bad time at The Hobbit. I'm going to cough now. You might want to start editing this out.
Here, I'll pause it. You done now?
I'm back.
God.
Things
are still exiting you.
I'm still getting rid of the last of this gnarly cold. Sinus infection, whatever it was.
Anyway.
Save the date.
Oh, yeah, right.
A little indie. Mm-hmm. Lizzie Kaplan, Martin Starr, Jeffrey Arend, who is not a household name,
mm-hmm.
Unless your house contains Christina Hendricks. He's a household name to her because they're married.
Right. You may remember him as the...
the guy who eats all the weed in Super Trooper.
Yes. That's what I always think of him. Whenever I see him, I think of him licking the glass that divides the front and back seat of the police car and saying the snozzberries taste like snozzberries.
Yeah, he's real funny in Super Troopers.
Yes.
But what a goony-looking dude he is.
He's unusual.
He must have an amazing personality.
The funny guys get the hot chicks.
That works even in the gay world. I pulled you on the basis of my amazing personality.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's looking at me as the trophy wife.
Scenario. We all know. Everybody knows you're the adorable one.
You crazy?
That's how it goes.
Yeah. Anyway.
So the yeah. He's in it, and...
Mark Webber.
Mark Webber, who's this dude who's only seen any movies, and he's in some big movies, too, but...
Yeah.
Small roles. And Alison Brie, who's also... Mm-hmm. Who is on Mad Men with Jeffrey Arendt's
wife.
And it's just these people... Like, Lizzie Kaplan is the main character, and she is sort of commitment-challenged.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't believe in marriage. She doesn't believe in, long-term relationships. She, moves in with Jeffrey Arendt, and then she dumps him. He proposes marriage to her after a set that is
from the stage.
From the stage, and she's like, no. And then he winds up on YouTube, and, you know. And meanwhile, her sister, played by Alison Brie, is planning her own wedding to Martin Starr, who is in the band with Jeffrey Arendt.
Mm-hmm.
Martin Starr stood in a line behind me at Panda Express this past week.
Really?
Yeah. He was at the West Side Pavilion food court with Charlene Yee. I don't know why.
Of course he was.
I don't know why.
That reminds me, we need to get the new Vanity.
But I turned around behind me and I looked at him and I was like, who's that? Do I know that dude? Because he's got this beard.
Right.
You know, and I know a disproportionate number.
I was going to say, that
I know a disproportionate number of men with beards.
Friend of ours,
and,
yes.
And then I was like, oh, it's Martin Starr. And then I turned around and ordered my orange chicken.
Speaking of Martin Starr, we need to get the new Vanity Fair.
Why?
The Freaks and Geeks reunion.
Oh, really?
Stuff.
Okay. Yeah,
big interviews and photos and all kind of things.
Okay, so sure, anyway. This is a little... anecdote. West Side Pavilion food court, after I noted the presence of Martin Starr and Charlene Yee.
So Charlene Yee, who is actually Asian, was eating fakey Chinese food at the Panda Express.
I don't know why that was happening. It just was. And so, you know what? There was an Asian lady in front of me at Panda Express.
All right.
Panda Express is delicious.
I know. I like Panda Express.
It's delicious. And so, but as I sat there in the food court, I texted videos to play while I ate my dinner. It's just such a great thing. I love doing that.
That is a great mall innovation.
I'm sitting in the food court.
I always request Call Me Maybe.
And texting that. I did request whatever that song is.
Her new one?
Her new song. What's that song called about kissing?
Kissing something. Yeah. It was in Fun Size.
And I requested that song. And then I happily ate while I watched, what's her name?
Carly Rae Jepsen.
Carly Rae Jepsen.
What's her name?
Like
she was the Thanksgiving girl.
It was a sudden. Yeah. What were we talking about? The movie.
The save the date.
You know what? It reminded me of Reality Bites and Singles.
Mm-hmm.
Is sort of like relationship dramedy for a very specific generational audience. You know, this is in my review. I said
everybody has to have their own
red meat for millennials. Is basically this movie because nothing out of the ordinary takes place. I mean, I am in favor of the film because it sort of tiptoes around a lot of cliche stuff that normally does happen in these kinds of films. And so it should be sort of, you know, applauded for its willingness to step around, sure. You know, the typical stuff. No heroes, no villains, nobody to root for or against. You're just sort of watching these young 20-something people, you know.
Make stupid mistakes,
yeah. It's occasionally funny. It didn't really move me in any way. But it has a lot of, you know, cultural sort of signifiers for, you know, that specific age group and
for the kids
and mindset. It's very much a sort of like, you know, there are a lot of cultural moments in the movie that show to that, you know, that audience.
Would they play Pokemon?
No. What is this, backwards land today? Are you saying the things I normally say to you?
Well, I was trying to think of what the new millennial signifiers are.
Well, no, so I mentioned a couple of them in my review, like the idea that like this massive humiliation takes place on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
But then they just sort of brush it off. Like, oh, well, that's the world we live in now, and I've been humiliated in public online for a million people to see.
And that's actually become kind of it's not a cliche yet, but it's popped up in a few movies now.
Right, because it's a thing that happens in real life,
absolutely. Yeah,
and what's interesting about that moment in the movie is that it doesn't become its own little subplot of, oh,
it's just a thing that happens.
I've been ruined. You know, it's sort of like,
whatever.
Yeah, I live on the internet, and sometimes it stabs me in the face.
This is what happens to people.
You know, they're just visual things. You know, like the guy, there's a cartoon artist whose name I'm currently blanking on because that's what happens when I'm talking on this microphone. He does all the illustrations for Lizzie Kaplan's character, who's an artist. And so, you know, he's like a popular comic artist guy. And again, sorry, blanking on his name. It's in the review. I wrote it down. You know, there's a moment where Jeffrey Arendt and Martin Starr are sort of standing underneath a big sign for the band No Age.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they're a cool, you know, recent, you know, they've been around for a while and they're popular. And
right.
And so, you know, it's kind of like having, you know, like I said, in reality, in Singles, you know, it's like all these sub pop songs and people wearing Tad t-shirts and stuff.
Right.
And that was stuff that you could hang on to if you were
your generational cultural moment.
Yeah. And so it's little decorations around these sort of traditional sort of commonplace stories. It's not a bad movie. It didn't really thrill me, but you know, it's nice. It's on and it's available on demand, so you can see it if you want.
Yeah. It's no Celeste and Jesse Forever.
No, it's not. But then, I was only sort of okay with Celeste and Jesse Forever too. So,
okay.
So then there's Amour.
Yes.
Tell them what's about.
Winner of the Palme d'Or at Cannes this year, and winner of the Los Angeles Film Critics Association Best Picture of the Year. The new film from Michael Haneke is about an elderly couple in Paris, played by Emmanuel Riva and Jean-Louis Trintignant. And at the beginning of the film, the wife has, like, a mini stroke. Very quick. And, like, you know, by the time the husband is able to sort of figure out what's going on and goes down the hall to try and, you know, deal with it, he comes back and she's apparently fine, but they go to the hospital and she loses mobility in half of her body, and from there just sort of continues a decline, you know, physically and I guess to some extent mentally. And you know, early on she very clearly tells the husband, like, look, this is just going to get worse and I don't want to be around for this. But of course he, you know, is not hearing of that and is there to take care of her, and does take care of her, to the exclusion of pretty much everything else in their lives, including their daughter, played by Isabelle Huppert, who they basically just sort of kind of, you know, keep at arm's distance. And the father's like, look, this is my thing, I'm dealing with it, and, you know, you're being around doesn't help. And it, you know, something happens that we won't give away, but it's, you know, it's a really powerful film. And I think from a director like Haneke, while it's never sentimental or goopy, it's, I think, probably the most humane thing from him I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was a really hard movie for me to watch.
Well, yeah.
Just because of my mom had dealt with this, you know, very same exact thing. Like, right. The exact symptoms that Emmanuel Riva deals with in this film, the exact specifics of her decline are precisely the ones that happened to my mother. Mm. Only with Emmanuel Riva, the process takes some time within the context of a year, I guess.
They're not always clear about how much time has passed.
Not a lot, years and years.
Well,
mom, it took 8 years.
Yeah.
For that process, from the first stroke until she passed away this year,
right.
And so it was very moving and very, very, very
difficult,
very tender area for me.
Yeah,
watching it. Having said that, it's incredibly moving. It's incredibly powerful. It's very deliberately paced, and that's Michael Haneke's way.
Yeah,
you are never witness to what other filmmakers would deliver without thought. They would show you the process of each new, you know, crack in the surface.
Mm-hmm.
But in this film, a new scene comes along and you are meant to understand that it has been a little while that has passed, and now there's something new that's wrong with her.
Right.
Like, now her entire right side of her body is paralyzed, and now she's losing her speech, and now she
has no control over her bodily functions.
That stuff is never shown on camera. You do not get to see the breaking points. You only see
that's what's happening.
The thing you only get to see the husband taking care of that aftermath.
Right.
What were you going to say?
Well, you talked about how he sort of doesn't dwell on the things that the directors do. There's a little moment that I really liked, and I love the way that he does it, which is well into the film, you know, the wife is very sick. She's been bedridden for a very long time. And then the husband is sitting alone in the living room, and suddenly he sees her playing piano because she had been a piano teacher. And, you know, cuts to back to him listening, and then the scene ends. And they don't do the thing that almost every other filmmaker on earth would have done, which would be to cut back to the piano with no one sitting there, just right. So we knew, oh, it was a, you know, hallucination, or he dreamed it, or blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Haneke trusts our intelligence.
Yeah, and he doesn't give you anything.
Go back and give us that moment just so we can, you know, it can be all, you know,
he gives you the most. He gives you actually the most important stuff. He doesn't give you the things that you can always hang your narrative journey on. And that's one of the things I really admire him.
Patience for it. There's a lot to get out of this.
I really admire him for that. And I also admire the way that he takes what is normally a very sensationalistic you know, subject. And comments on the fact that, yes, this is a sensationalistic subject. Yes, I could take you down this manipulative path if I felt like it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a conversation that Jean-Louis
Trintignant
has with Emmanuel Riva at the beginning of the film about seeing a movie. He talks about having seen a movie that was pretty schmaltzy and that made him cry uncontrollably. And that even when, after the fact, when he was telling someone else about the film that he saw, he begins crying talking about the film. And so there is always this element with Michael Haneke. There's this, there's a lot of distance going on with him. But there's also this idea always, it seems, the films I've seen of him, the films of his that I've seen, and I've seen a good, you know, half a dozen of them, that he's in control of you.
Right.
Funny Games is all about this.
Oh, yeah.
Funny Games is all about the idea of manipulation. And the idea that you know, he is manipulating you in a certain way, but he's going to manipulate you in this other direction. And that you are watching a film, and he knows that you know this, and he knows you're watching a film
too.
And so, you know, it's also, again, one of his subjects, it seems to me, is frequently about the act of looking and the act of viewing other people's, you know, stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's what cachet is often about. And so, where was I going with this? I just blanked.
About him talking about the movie and
yeah, it's not just a film about this very tender, moving relationship between two elderly people and what waits for you, you know. It's also about, you know, the act of watching this kind of film, and again, and another thing that I really admired about it is that it's so unsentimental about everything, almost to the point of, if you wanted to call it despair, you could, because there's this idea that these people have constructed this really comfortable reality for themselves. They've surrounded themselves with you know, art and music and life and
books,
friends and books and stuff, and that's their sort of little cocoon from the world, and they act that way as well. They shut everyone out when the problem happens.
Right.
They shut out their own daughter.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing that you can do to prepare yourself for life is going to save you in the end,
right,
from the disintegration that will happen, either quickly or slowly. And that's kind of a bummer.
Yeah, this movie is...
It's tremendously powerful. It's one of my favorite movies of the year.
Yeah.
I love a bummer. And
it's super sad, but it's...
And it's incredibly really sad, but he and Jean-Louis Trintignant and Emmanuel Riva, they're amazing.
Yeah,
two great performances. She is perfect in this role. And I just love seeing really, really old people. They're both in their 80s.
Yeah.
And I just really still love seeing really old people in movies, you know, doing stuff like this. And I've been, you know, My Night at Maud's, one of my favorite Eric Rohmer movies and one of my favorite Christmas movies.
I was going to say, it's in my book.
He's the main guy in that.
Trintignant.
And it was like, you know, 50 years ago or whatever.
Yeah, well, Emmanuel Riva was in Hiroshima Mon Amour,
right,
like
right,
60
right.
years ago.
Right. So, and that woman is 85 years old.
Yeah.
And she's stunning.
And like, she, you know.
She looks beautiful.
Yeah.
And she's 85 years old.
And you know, it totally goes there in terms of allowing herself to just look like someone who has lost their faculties.
Right.
You know, to be like... in a shower scene, you know
being
like,
scrubbed down by a nurse.
Being scrubbed down by a nurse and just saying, hurts,
yeah.
hurts, yeah. over and over again. It's just like, ah.
Yeah, it's not an easy movie to watch, but it's really, really, really terrific.
Yeah, it's this is an essential movie, but it is no walk in the park.
Yeah. The end of movies. Yeah, we're done talking about movies, okay, except for the DVD releases.
Yes, what do you got?
have I already recommended Tarkovsky's Mirror? Did I do that once before?
I don't remember.
When I was on Mubi.com, mm-hmm, looking at the 48 frames per second article, I noticed that you can watch Tarkovsky's The Mirror streaming on Mubi, on Mubi.com right now. You should do that, you know, provided that you can't see it in a movie theater anywhere, which is always, you know, the place you should try to see things. But, you know, let's say you're in the middle of nowhere. You're never going to get to see Tarkovsky's Mirror on a screen if you live in the middle of nowhere.
Well,
I'm right about this. Yeah. You know, you could watch it on DVD.
Yeah.
You could get it streaming on Mubi. And it's Tarkovsky's, Andrei Tarkovsky's probably his most difficult movie.
So naturally you gravitate toward that one.
But it's difficult only if you really have to have a story.
Fair enough.
If you're that petty.
How bougie.
If you're that bougie and you need a story. No, it's this autobiographical sort of dreamlike stream of consciousness film about, you know, various points in his life. And some of the most beautiful images that you'll ever see in a movie are in this film. It goes from black and white to color, and you know, it shifts around, and there's never a solid place to stand in this film. But just watch it and let it happen. It is so beautiful and so amazing.
Yeah.
And I saw it 20 something years ago at the Scala Cinema in London.
Ew.
On a matinee. And it was because it was cheap.
Right.
It was something cheap to do. I didn't have any money. Mm. I had like zero money that semester that I was there. But I went and got that cinema calendar, and I was like, I'm going to see this and this and this and this. You know, because it was like a pound. Like you show your student ID, it was like a pound to get in, you know.
I'm embarrassed to say.
So I did. That place was a dump, too. And it's pretty much, I think it's gone now, or else they turned it into some, you know,
porn theater,
discotheque, or something, you know.
Tarkovsky is probably one of the directors that I am the most behind on seeing his stuff. Like, I think I've only seen Solaris.
I'll tell you, you gotta work with that man. Like, you don't get a Cinnabon at the mall and walk up to the box office and go, yeah, I think I'll see The Sacrifice. You know, like, that's not what you do.
Yeah. No, I need...
There are some filmmakers that you... They'll meet you part of the way, but you better be ready to meet them the other part of the way. Right. Yeah.
Granted. Yeah, which is probably part of
why. And those are our listeners.
Which is why I haven't...
Those are the people who listen to the Linoleum Knife podcast.
Yes.
People who love cinema. Whether it's Tarkovsky or Juana Man.
Well, I love Cinnabon, so...
I also...
Love a Cinnabon.
Love a Cinnabon.
Well, mine this week actually is... It's in multiple ways of being available is Santa Claus Conquers the Martians. There is a stunning new Blu-ray release because somebody somewhere thought that we needed to be able to see
a stunning new Blu-ray.
Yeah, the high def of Santa Claus Conquers the Martians. So it looks better than it ever has before. So there's something to be said for that. I would also highly recommend there is the, of course, the Mystery Science Theater Santa Claus Conquers the Martians, which I think a lot of people came to the movie that way. And it's a great episode. But then also the Cinematic Titanic, which is one of the MST3K adjunct offshoots. They also did Santa Claus Conquers the Martians, and they made it a point to not repeat a single joke from the Mystery Science Theater version. So it's a completely different riff on the movie. It's very, very funny. So I will put links to all three of those on the Linoleum Knife page on Facebook. And again, just to remind you, even if you aren't buying the products that we talk about, the DVD recommendations or whatever, if you go to the Amazon link via our Linoleum Knife page and then just let that be your portal to go shopping there, we get a kickback from whatever it is you wind up purchasing, and that helps the show. So we appreciate it if you do that.
Help us help you help
yourself.
Right.
Something. I don't know. Letters. We have letters.
Yeah, hang on. Let me pull up the folder here. So,
by the way, I was a little slow in doing so because, thank you for accentuating. We've been sick all week. But I did post the lengthy reviews of, or response to our reviews, rather, regarding Killing Them Softly and Holy Motors on the Linoleum Knife page on Facebook. So thank you, Jordan, for sending that in. It was great stuff. It would take an entire episode to read it. So anyway, thank you for letting us post it on Facebook, and go check it out and, you know, share your own thoughts about either of those films. What do we got, Dave?
This is from Matt.
Mm-hmm.
He says, "What up, Big D and Little Al?"
To paraphrase Paul Simon, you can't call me Al.
I decided to do a top 10 best movies of the year list. I know that Les Mis and Django Unchained have not been released yet. I'll probably do another list if I find them good. Alonzo, you might like this list, but Dave will probably love this list. Hopefully, here is my list and a little description. Dread 3D. You hated that.
I didn't hate it, but I made the mistake of seeing it like within 72 hours of seeing The Raid Redemption.
Yeah, I know.
So it was just me.
I'm okay with Dread 3D. I get it.
I don't hate it. I'm just not.
Yeah.
Feeling it.
I wouldn't. I enjoyed myself. It's just not.
It's not going to be on your top 10.
It's not going to be on the top 10 list. No. The Master.
Okay. Just
astounding film. The Impossible. I haven't seen The Impossible.
Have not either.
I got to watch it this week. Argo.
Okay.
Super into that.
Mm-hmm.
Beasts of the Southern Wild.
The further away from that one I get, the more questions that come up. But I should look at it again.
We've discussed my problems with this film.
Yeah.
They have nothing to do with the quality of the filmmaking.
No.
They have everything to do with the content of the film.
Right. Yeah. The idea of turning what is essentially an abusive childhood into this sort of magical realistic fantasy.
Right. Keep the Lights On.
Yeah.
Yeah. And his little... he actually provides a little commentary after each thing.
Oh, we'll share those.
Dread 3D, great visuals and a fun action movie. The Master, fantastic performances, make a rich story and visuals. The Impossible, emotionally satisfying and rich performances. Argo, funny, tense, and final act that made me bite my nails to the bone. Beasts of the Southern Wild, a blare of sheer beautiful direction. Keep the Lights On.
A blare?
A blair. I don't know, dude. He wrote it.
B-L-A-I-R?
B-L-A-R-E.
A blair. Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. I never heard that used that way, but all right.
Keep the Lights On. I still like girls.
Okay. Why did you just say no homo?
I had a girl lick my face yesterday.
That's nice.
Gray.
Oh, wow.
Gray licked my face yesterday.
Gray will do that.
Mm. Safety not guaranteed.
Oh, yeah. I really like that movie.
Moonrise Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
Lincoln.
Yeah.
And this is not... His number one is this is not a film.
Mm, definitely.
Just, you know.
Are you skipping his descriptions?
Yeah.
All right, fine. Okay.
Move it along.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is not a film that's great, although somebody was trying to tell me that it was more staged than it appears, and I was like, do I care?
Or did you go to the house and determine this on your own? Who said that?
I'll tell you later.
All right. Then he says, P.S., have yourself a movie Little Christmas.
Oh, thanks.
Thanks, Matt. Next letter... Oh, it's the really long Killing Them Softly from Jordan.
Jordan, right, which is okay. You can read on our Facebook page.
I still haven't. Oh, did you post it
on? It's on the Facebook
page. And he said it was okay to do that?
Yeah.
All right. Blah, 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 blah. where am I going backwards in emails?
Here we go.
From Daniel. I just started listening to the podcast after reading about you on AfterElton.com.
Yay! Thank you, Lewis, for telling.
I've seen Alonzo on What the Flick, but was glad to come across this. I downloaded 3 episodes, and I'm glad I did, because I probably wouldn't have kept listening.
Oh, boy.
If I just heard the one where you reviewed Anna Karenina. I don't know what that means.
That's on you. I didn't see it.
I don't know. But he doesn't say why, right. Unless it's just that he disagrees about Anna Karenina.
I guess.
But I've listened to several now, and I'm really enjoying them. First, Alonzo, the Merchant Ivory film you were trying to think of, R.E., the queen of the Stardust Ballroom discussion, was probably Roseland.
One of the low-budget
films that is really interesting, though strangely cold and removed, but with a great cast. I decided to do a top 10 list and really stick to the rules. I don't see movies over and over usually, but there are some that I do. Of those, these are my top 10 in no particular order.
Okay.
Parting Glances.
Yeah, one of my favorites.
Yeah. The Philadelphia Story.
Love it.
What's Up, Doc? It's one of the funniest movies of all time.
So yeah. Good.
The Women.
Sure.
All About Eve.
Absolutely.
Poison.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic movie. Poison, I think, may have been the first movie I saw that had, you know, explicitly gay content that... like at the time that I was sort of coming out.
Hmm.
So it was really, it really affected me.
Funny, because actually I remember seeing Parting Glances not long after coming out. And really, I mean, you know, I had already seen...
You did that earlier than I did, though.
Yeah, I had maybe seen Morris and a couple other things, but that was... But yeah, it was the same thing. And Poison, again, that's such an interesting...
You had so much gay inside of you.
Yeah, so it was dying to come out.
It had to bust through.
The thing about Poison that's so interesting is that it was that moment where people were so starved to see gay anything that they would go see what is essentially an experimental film.
Yeah.
An experimental feature film.
Yeah.
You know, that I think a few years earlier, nobody would have been ready for it. And a few years later, nobody would have gone to see it. So, right. You know, it was perfect timing.
The Wizard of Oz.
Okay.
The Last of England.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Singing in the Rain.
Oh, heaven.
Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
You are 100%.
You're 100%, right. Man.
No question. Yeah.
I had to be brutal and cut it down from 15. I don't have many recent movies on. I think I have to give them a little time before I put them on the top 10 list.
Is The Last of England the one with Adam Ant, or is that Jubilee?
I think it's Jubilee with Adam Ant.
Yeah, okay.
He says, now the cheating. For Christmas, Shop Around the Corner,
yeah.
White Christmas, mm-hmm. The 1938 A Christmas Carol,
okay.
The Thin Man and The Thin Man Returns.
Okay.
Yeah. And then his guilty pleasures, Drop Dead Gorgeous. Everybody likes that Drop Dead Gorgeous.
To which I always say, have you seen Smile?
Right.
If you haven't,
probably has.
He's probably that's true. Seen Judging Smile, from this list, I'm thinking like he would Smile, have. But just yeah. In case you haven't, you should see Smile.
The Abominable Dr. Fibes.
Fun.
The 70s gay porn film Drive. I don't know what this is.
With Ryan Gosling? I don't know that one.
A weird movie set in a gay disco / cabaret hosted by a sex-phobic drag queen that involves a weird spy plot that makes up for a mostly unattractive cast. I gotta see this.
I do not know this
what
one.
What is this?
Yeah. Sounds like Cafe Flesh or something.
And variety shows from the 50s through the 70s, especially starring Anne Margaret or Shirley MacLaine.
Well, yes. It's funny. I've been watching, you know, we as wallpaper at our party yesterday, I had on like the Sonny and Cher Christmas specials DVD and the Danny Kaye Christmas DVD that just came out and Christmas with the King family. Yeah, I really miss variety television. It was pretty awesome.
Yeah. From Cassidy. Hello, David Alonzo. As a fan, review, reader, and devoted listener of the podcast, I am now ready to purchase your books.
You can skip that
one. Et cetera. Also, in the spirit of the season, I would like to give you guys my Christmas top 10 in no specific order. Okay, well, the first thing on your list, Cassidy, is A Charlie Brown Christmas, which is not a movie.
Yes, it's great, but it's not a movie.
I don't care if it isn't feature length. This is my childhood distilled into purity. Brazil.
Yes.
Christmas cheer used as a distraction from dehumanization of the consumer public by its government. Gremlins. An old Capra movie invaded by the Corman factory. Die Hard. Nothing is more festive than throwing a computer bomb down an elevator shaft. Batman Returns. Craziest superhero villain banter ever. Batman. Mistletoe can be deadly if you eat it. Catwoman, but a kiss is even deadlier if you mean it. WTF. A Muppet's Christmas Carol.
Written by Dan Waters.
Yeah. A Muppet's Christmas Carol. Still my favorite version.
Okay.
Elf. A Pleasant Surprise. The Rankin Bass references are brilliant, and this marks the beginning of my Zooey Deschanel crush.
Also references to Miracle on 34th Street by virtue of the fact that they're all working at Gimbel's.
Right, right. The Year Without a Santa Claus, again, not a movie. That Heat Miser, Cold Miser song still randomly pops into my head sometimes all year round.
Yeah, the thing is, that's really the only good part of that special.
We got it in TiVo, don't we?
Yeah.
It's already saved.
But really, Year Without a Santa Claus lives and dies by the Heat Miser, Cold Miser song. The rest of it is kind of boring.
I'll have to rewatch it this year and find out. National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite vacation movie in general. Eyes Wide Shut.
Mm-hmm.
For all the reasons Alonso has expressed ad nauseum.
Excuse me.
Love Actually. A close runner-up. I've only seen it once, but I quite enjoyed it. Thanks for entertaining me weekly. Cassidy, a male with a gender non-specific but nonetheless girly-sounding name.
Did he write before and you said Cassidy and we discussed whether or not that was a dude?
I don't know if I did. We probably did. Mm. Yeah. That is a hard, that's a hard name.
It could go either way.
Yeah, if you have a name like Pat, if you've got that kind of name, then you should just always say like
right. This is, well, Cassidy is sort of the new generation version of that. Right. Well, wasn't that a joke on Saturday Night Live?
I don't know.
Cassidy. Who are you talking to? Cassidy.
It's from Adam. My linoleum knife list. Now, mind, this list of movies is unique, and that these movies aren't representative of my necessarily favorite films or my good taste. These are the films that I remember going to see in theaters and on early cable in my childhood. So let's say from 1979 to 1990. Go ahead, knife me. Barbarella.
Oh, love it.
Suspiria.
Fun.
It's crazy. I love Suspiria so much. Mm. Xanadu.
Oh, heavens.
Popeye.
You know, I've still never seen Popeye.
What?
I know. I love Robert Altman, and I love the Harry Nilsson
score. You haven't seen... Didn't I show Skidoo? You the olive oil... He's Large song.
Did I show that I've to you seen once? That number before. But you may have shown it to me. But yeah, no, I've never seen the whole movie. I need to.
Star Trek 2.
Oh, Wrath of Khan.
Yeah. Okay. Gremlins.
Mm-hmm.
E.T.
Mm-hmm.
An American Tale. That's generational.
Yeah.
Because I saw An American Tale in its theatrical release, but I was already, you know,
in your 30s.
Basically an adult.
Yeah.
When did that come out? The 80s sometime. 80s, I was like 20. 20s. I was in my early 20s, and I was like, this is a movie for five-year-olds. And, yeah. Batteries Not Included.
Oh, gosh. Did you ever see that one?
Yes.
Oh.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Mm-hmm, okay.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Suspiria.
Well, I do like Elias Koteas.
Dishonorable mentions go to Grease 2 and Star Trek 5.
Oh, ouch. Star Trek 5, that's the indefensible one. That's the one that Shatner directed.
Which one is that?
That's the one that Shatner directed.
I don't know which one is
it's,
that?
It's, oh God, I don't...
Which is the one with the whales?
That's 4.
Okay, that's the only one I saw.
Star Trek 4, The Voyage Home, and Star Trek 5, the Quickening, I don't know what it's called. But it's the one that really super sucks. I'm willing to give him everything, but Batteries Not Included.
All right.
So, unless you want to take off for American Tale. As
well. No, I do want to take off for
American Tale. All right, American so 85. Tale. Yeah. You're 85%.
Oh, you're going to support him on American Tale?
I think with cartoons, it all has to do with how old you are and how old you were when you first saw it. So all
right.
85% knife.
This is from Reese. Hey, David Alonso, I saw the movie Argo, and when the Ben Affleck character was revealed to be Latino, it kind of took me out of the film a bit. Would Argo be as successful if the main character was played by a Latino? It is a great film, but I think it was a lost opportunity to have a Latino person play this heroic real-life person. Then again, the movie would have never been made if Ben Affleck wasn't the lead. Thoughts?
I don't know if that's necessarily the case. I mean, I think Clooney produced this thing, right? He was sort of the thing behind it. I mean, you know, ideally, yes, it would be nice if it had been played by a Latino actor.
And it's not like there's a shortage of them.
Indeed. No, no. Or even Latino actors who, I think, you know, who can open a movie as well as Ben Affleck can, let's say, as an actor, like if Affleck were directing this thing. You know, yeah, I'd say certainly they could have gone there. I think this is one of those movies, though, where the character is really just kind of a cog in the plot.
Yeah.
So it's not about his inner life all that much. I mean, you get a bit of the stuff with the kid or whatever, right. But it's really about him being a function of making the story move forward.
That's, yes.
I'm not excusing them, but right. I'm just saying that that's, you know.
Right, but here's the thing. Every other, as those end credits roll, and they show you the real people.
Right. Everybody else in the movie looked like
their character. Everyone else in the movie really looked like their character.
Yeah.
And except for Ben Affleck.
True.
So, you know.
And it's not like they
was Michael Pena busy?
It's not like they've been hiding him either. I mean, like Affleck and that guy were doing a lot of joint interviews. Like they were both in EW and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would say ultimately it probably would not have hurt the films. I don't think people went to that movie because Affleck was in it necessarily.
Right.
So yeah, I think they probably could have cast a Latino actor and done just as well. And you know, yeah, but they probably should have. But it's still a good movie.
Yeah. Those are all the letters.
Okay.
We're done.
Real quick, as always, we want to thank our friends in the podcast universe, The Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli. Rotten Tomatoes Radio, where our friend Gray Drake has landed now that Popcorn Mafia is no longer happening. I'm going in on Tuesday to tape some segments about Christmas movies. I don't know when they're airing yet, because apparently Tuesday's show is all Hobbit, she told me. So so they're pre-taping me, and I don't know when that's going to wind up. Cooking with Malcolm Ingram, episode 2, featuring moi. Check it out. Fat Guys of the Movies, the Criterion cast, Throwing Shade, the very, very funny Throwing Shade from our neighbors. Team Jack, the Schmoes Know.
From our neighbors who?
For Aaron Gibson.
Says our neighbors.
Aaron Gibson.
Say their names.
Well, I said it. Okay, Aaron Gibson and Brian Safi. Right. We've talked about it on the show.
I know.
But anyway, yeah, they're hilarious. You should listen to Throwing Shade if you've not already. Even though they're in one of those fancy, you know, podcast network situations.
Oh,
now.
Are they?
Yeah. So the only shows they plug at the end are the other shows in their network, which I totally understand.
Who cares?
And I just want to put it out there.
So what?
If any fancy podcast networks want to pick up this show, we will happily only plug the other shows on the fancy podcast
network. We'll turn our backs on all these people that we're reading.
Oh, in a second. In a hot minute. So let's just be clear about that. Team Jack, the Schmoes Know, the B-Movies Podcast, Film Spotting SVU, Pod Crash, The Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to this show on iTunes, and if you want to leave us a positive review, we would love that. Quite a few of you have, and we appreciate it. You can stream the show at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com. Check out our Facebook page, again, for the long email we got from Jordan about a couple of movies that we've reviewed recently and for other cool stuff that we post up there every so often. You can follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast. You can check in the show at GetGlue.com, and you can always drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com with your top 10 list, with any questions or comments about the show, or just, you know, whatever you feel like sharing. Leaned in like you were going
to
say something.
I'm ready to say my thing.
All right. So we thank you, as always, for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.